You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison.
BBC News with Sue Montgomery. Syria says Israel has carried out air and missile strikes near the northern city of Aleppo, hitting a warehouse near the international airport and nearby air defence facilities. A British-based monitoring group said 36 government soldiers were killed, the highest number in a single Israeli attack since the Gaza conflict began. Yolande Nell reports from Jerusalem.
According to the UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, an Israeli attack targeted an area near rocket depots belonging to Hezbollah. The Israeli military told the BBC it wouldn't comment on reports in the foreign media. Israel has launched hundreds of strikes on targets in Syria since the civil war there began more than a decade ago, as it tries to cut off Hezbollah supply routes to Lebanon, but it rarely announces its actions. There's been an apparent increase in such strikes since Israel's war with Hamas began on the 7th of October.
The Israeli military says it's killed the deputy commander of Hezbollah's rocket and missile section in an airstrike in southern Lebanon. It said Ali Abed Ahsan Naim had been responsible for conducting and planning attacks against Israeli civilians. Video released online by Israel showed a moving vehicle exploding after being struck by a missile. The Chinese technology company Huawei more than doubled its profits last year as it recovers from tough US sanctions. It made $12 billion. Here's Mickey Bristow.
The US placed restrictions on Huawei because of fears that the company's links to the Chinese government posed a security risk. It stopped it, for example, from buying US microchips. Other countries also banned Huawei technology. The firm's revenue plummeted, but Huawei has rebounded. Last year, it launched a popular smartphone in China. It's also expanded its cloud computing and moved into the electric vehicle market. Its chairman said Huawei had been through a lot over the last few years, but had still managed to grow.
Recovery efforts are underway at the scene of a bus crash in Limpopo province in South Africa, in which 45 people died. The bus was carrying worshippers from Botswana for an Easter church service when it plunged off a bridge into a ravine. From Harare, here's Chinganyoka.
Emergency teams are using sniffer dogs to search the mangled wreckage and the river below. Forensics teams are trying to establish what happened. The authorities suspect the accident was caused by driver error. It occurred in broad daylight on a mountain pass with many hairpin bends and sharp inclines, and there was no oncoming traffic. The road also had restrictions for heavy and large vehicles. Gas canisters are among the debris, and this fueled the fire. Some bodies have been burnt beyond recognition, and so will need DNA testing to identify them.
World News from the BBC.
The 2024 Wisconsin Film Festival is coming to Madison Thursday, April 4th through Thursday, April 11th. This year's festival boasts over 140 films of all shapes and sizes, including the best cinema has to offer from all over the world and right here in Wisconsin. We've got experimental, animated, and student films, as well as documentaries, restored classics, films for kids, and more. For the first time in years, we'll be returning to both the Bartell Theater and the Barrymore Theater. Plus, we've expanded on the UW campus into Music Hall, and we are heading east to Flick's Brewhouse at the Easttown Mall. The Wisconsin Film Festival curates, promotes, and exhibits programs that showcase the art of cinema. A complete festival guide is available in the March issue of Isthmus and online, and tickets are available at wifilmfest.org. The 2024 Wisconsin Film Festival is coming to a screen near you, Thursday, April 4th through Thursday, April 11th. Helping keep local arts alive for almost 50 years, this is WORT Madison.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Arts and Literature Laboratory, Madison's community-based contemporary arts center located at 111 South Livingston Street. Arts and Literature Laboratory houses an art gallery and performance space, a writing center and library, artist studios, and a dedicated education studio, which features classes for all ages. Information about current exhibits, performances, and classes, and how to get involved as a member or volunteer, is available at artlitlab.org or on social media at artlitlab.
Thank you.
Friday, 8 o'clock. Buzz, it's March 29. I'm Andy Moore. I was excited to tell you all about a segment we had lined up for this morning's show. Stuff has happened. It was a segment about the Wisconsin Film Festival. You may already know this if you've been online this morning, but the Wisconsin Film Festival, scheduled to start next Thursday, as a promo that we just aired, indicated that the Wisconsin Film Festival is canceled. We just ran that promo. It's crazy. It's bad news for the film festival, since the cancellation involves a lawsuit against the organizers, several of them, in fact, over misuse of rights to independent films. So it's just big, gigantic cultural news this morning, and it cost us our first interview, so there's that too. April Fools. Nah, I got the jump on April Fool's Day, you know? That's not until Monday, but I'm not on the air Monday. So what's the guy going to do? You got to do April Fool's when you can do it. So we don't have a Wisconsin Film Festival segment this morning. The Wisconsin Film Festival is not canceled, but we do have an April Fool's Day segment later this morning. The founding and longtime editor and oftentimes character guest on the Friday Buzz, the editor of The Onion, Scott Dickers, will join us to talk about why laughter matters and what makes it work. So that's going to be fun, and no joke. Also later in the hour, we'll anticipate something else. The full solar eclipse that will happen a week from Monday. A UW-Madison astronomer joins us for that. And first up, we'll dive into the topic of health literacy. And this is another one of those, this is like an in-anticipation show, because a huge health literacy summit is in the works for next month, and we'll hear all about that in just a few minutes. I know some of you are anticipating me to comment on the Badger men's basketball team's inauspicious participation in the NCAA tournament. I hate to let you down, but it's just too easy to make fun of this team in the shadow of the comedy that was their play in Brooklyn last Friday. It's kind of like how easy it is for SNL to lead every week's show with a Trump impersonation. The good news is Wisconsin Athletic Director Chris McIntosh announced yesterday that head coach Greg Gard will be around for another season. So I get to look forward to a whole nother year of poking at that particular ambient American. You might not be looking forward to that, but I am. Hello to Engineer Without Peer. Good morning, Jim Wilson. Jim, do you get into April Fool's Day? Is that your thing?
Yeah, it's a fun time to, you know, pull a couple of, well-meaning pranks on people.
You know, it's fun perpetuating them, but it's also kind of fun being the victim of them, too.
It is.
Yeah, so all right, I bet you've got some tricks up your sleeve. Good morning to Ankur Malhotra, Friday Buzz music producer. Ankur will have Ankur's picks and all kinds of solar eclipse-related musical tricks up his sleeve. We're happy to see you this morning, as always, DJ Spin Cycle. And a hearty howdy to Friday Buzz post-production producer and front office supervisor, Mr. Elliot LeBrun, who told me this morning that he's going to go to friggin' Vermont to see the solar eclipse. So everybody, this is a big show. Solar eclipse, April Fool's Day. It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. No more fooling around. Let's get buzzing. We'll be right back. the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. Segment 1. Wisconsin Health Literacy is a division of Wisconsin Literacy, Inc. And on April 8, as I just noticed in this show introduction, 8 and 9, actually, Health Literacy will team up with 8 other states to present the Health Literacy Collaborative Summit at Madison's Monona Terrace. The summit will gather together healthcare professionals and educators, as I understand it, advocates from across the country to explore innovative ways for improving health literacy and health equity. The summit is titled Transforming the Future of Health and Well-Being Together. Brian Abel will be there. He's the Director of Health Literacy at Wisconsin Literacy, Inc. Brian, good morning, and welcome to the Friday Buzz.
Good morning, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Health literacy is one of those things that it probably means exactly what it says. But to get us started, what is meant when someone uses that term?
Yeah, so just like literacy, just giving individuals, you know, the means and the know-how to be able to make informed decisions, health literacy is exactly that. Health literacy, you know, has components for, you know, organizations that are serving people with organizational health literacy. But from a personal standpoint, it's providing individuals just the means and the ways and the understanding to make those informed decisions as it relates to their health and well-being.
This is maybe a kind of an obvious question, but talk about what there is to gain specifically from a person improving their health literacy.
So, you know, there's a lot to gain when you're talking about individual and personal health literacy from a personal aspect, right? So there's a lot of individuals that have trouble navigating the various systems across the spectrum as it relates to their overall health. And it's not out of, you know, arrogance. It may just be out of, you know, just not knowing, you know, what to do or how to navigate. It's like picking up, you know, a new subject in school for the first time, but not understanding or knowing, you know, what's the first step. So influencing and providing individuals the means and the knows of how to, you know, operate from a health perspective is, you know, it helps individuals make that informed decision on the importance on, you know, well-being and health, right? So like, you know, not knowing, you know, what may, you know, drive negative health outcomes can be detrimental if you're walking in blind. But if you're a little bit influenced on, you know, what are the steps and the provisions you may need to take as it relates to your own personal health, you may have a better chance on actually getting to the goal that we all have, and that's, you know, personal well-being.
Yes, and on first glimpse, a lot of people may think who aren't familiar with the term that health literacy means, you know, eating well, regular checkups, those things. But it's to hear your larger description, this is how to navigate the bureaucracy, the system, the administration, all of those kinds of mazes that lay before all of us. You mentioned the word means. What are some of the means for going there and improving health literacy?
Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of different types of avenues that we're going to explore at the summit, right? So, you know, one thing that a lot of, you know, because we live in such a multi-generational world, one thing, you know, with the advancements of technology is, you know, it's digital literacy, right? So mm-hmm. There's a lot of great innovative speakers here coming to talk about their story and their journey in the digital literacy avenue. A lot of institutions now are using things such as portals, and, you know, they're providing, you know, patient education or different types of education through digital means. And, you know, not everyone understands how to navigate technology. Not everyone is tech savvy, mm-hmm. but, you know, providing, you know, those means, those instructions on how to navigate through those particular avenues is crucially important for, you know, the promotion of well-being for everyone.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Brian Abel, the Director of Health Literacy at Wisconsin Literacy, Inc. We're talking about the big Health Literacy Summit scheduled for April 8 and 9 at Monona Terrace. Brian, the title of the forthcoming conference, and it's a whopper, Transforming the Future of Health and Well-Being Together, is actually a part, as I understand it, of an advocacy framework drafted by the Ripple Foundation. What is that organization, and what is the framework all about?
Yeah, sure. So the Ripple Foundation is a national organization that are stewards and advocates for a new up and rising framework called the Vital Conditions for Well-Being. So I know a lot of individuals may be listening in and tuning in and knowing about, you know, the term that's been used, loosely used the last decade of social determinants of health or social drivers. Now, this framework actually looks to swim further upstream in attacking, you know, crucial systems that impact well-being for all. You know, as you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, a lot of what we're doing now in America and all over the world is trying to get to some space of health equity. So a lot of what that, you know, that framework looks at is addressing those things that cause those social determinants and actually swimming further upstream and attacking it at the systemic level. You know, leveraging, you know, organizations, like organizations are on all different spaces, but some people have a little bit more capacity and, you know, they're a little bit further ahead. And we're trying to, you know, figure out ways to use what's at the core of the framework, use civic muscle, so that we can, you know, together as a community kind of, you know, drive towards that systemic change.
You're taking it right to my next question. Talk a little bit more about how health literacy and health equity coincide.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, right, with health literacy, what we're doing is we're trying to give individuals the means and the ways, you know, to promote their well-being through health. Just, you know, whether it's providing education in a language, which we call in our space plain language, at the level of that patient. So why health literacy is actually the catalyst to a lot of the different domains of social determinants of health so that we can get to actual health equity, and giving individuals the means and the ways and the understanding on exactly how to address some of the barriers that, you know, they're facing day to day that is driving, you know, negative health outcomes is really essential, and it's really key. So though there are multiple sectors and there are multiple spaces on how you can actually, you know, start to change or reduce the barriers that people are facing, if you don't know exactly how or what's the first step, there's a very hard time trying to reach success. So giving individuals and empowering individuals with, you know, some good health literacy is crucially important to at least getting there to health equity.
It sounds really efficient. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you're not only helping people find ways to push through some of these challenges and barriers, but you're also identifying them so that people understand what's holding them back.
Correct.
Yeah. The guest list of speakers for the conference is quite large. Talk a little bit more about the conference. It's so interesting that it's people will be represented from states all around the country. Tell us what the 2 days will give us a little forecast about what that will be like.
Yeah, sure. So first off, I just wanted to mention that if individuals are still interested in joining us on April 8th and April 9th, please feel free to come on over and take part in this transformative journey that we're all about to go through. But just a little bit about the conference. So the conference is open to, you know, educators in all different spaces. We're opening it up to hospital system and healthcare providers such as nurses, social workers, pharmacists, public health practitioners, community health workers, as well as students, those individuals that are going to be at the forefront of this for tomorrow. We're offering that out to students. We have two rates. I've shared them here, but if you would like more information on, you know, how to register and, you know, you want to talk through some of the rates, please feel free to reach out to me at brian@wisconsinliteracy.org. But at our students, you know, if you are a student, that's the only, you know, subsidy that we're providing. You can come join us for $150, as well as, you know, if you are any other kind of practitioner, the conference price is $390. What's cool about our conference this year is that we have four different tracks. We got health literacy in schools, I talked a little bit about digital health literacy. So we do have digital tools for health. That is a track. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're going to have our general health literacy track, and then we're going to have our health insurance literacy track. We have speakers from all over. We have speakers coming in from the various nine states that the collaborative forms, as well as we even have some international speakers coming through to come talk to us about how they're leveraging health literacy in their space.
It sounds so comprehensive. If you don't mind, could you give your email address again and the website? I noticed you can register on the website too, but I don't believe we've provided that.
Sure, yeah. So my email again is Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at wisconsinliteracy.org. And the website that you can join, you can register for summit is www.healthliteracycollaborative.org.
Brian Abel, thanks for joining us on the Friday Buzz, and yeah, best of luck with the summit.
Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing a lot of you at the summit, and come take part of this good adventure that we're about to go through.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Brian Abel is the Director of Health Literacy at Wisconsin Literacy, Inc. The Health Literacy Summit, as we just spoke to, is scheduled for April 8 and 9 at Monona Terrace. All righty then. We're going to listen to some music, hear some announcements, get Unker's live music picks, and then we'll have Onion founding editor Scott Dickers on the line for a pre-April Fool's conversation about what makes something funny. You're listening to Community Power, WRT-FM 89.9 radio and WRTFM.org online, originating from South Bedford Street in Madison, Wisconsin. It's 8:23.
Well, there might be a problem with the sun. Well, there might be a problem. Might be a problem with the sun. Oh, because my eyes can't see why you don't like me. Oh, eyes can't see. Oh, why you don't like me. And I know that is not the moon that won't let me see where you are. Oh, you are.
Game of the 2024 Madison Roller Derby season is on Saturday, April 6th in the arena at the Alliant Energy Center. This month's matchups are Reservoir Dolls versus Unholy Rollers and Vixens versus Quad Squad. Doors at 5 p.m., skates hit the track at 6 p.m. Tickets can be purchased online at madisonrollerderby.org/tickets or at the door. The final home game of the 2024 Madison Roller Derby season is on Saturday, April 6th in the arena at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison. Supporting community nonprofits since 1975, this is WRT 89.9 FM Madison, listener-sponsored community radio.
You wake up to the 8 o'clock buzz to get the week started.
Now, we need the help of a good volunteer to run our on-air operations each Monday.
Sure, that means waking up a little earlier.
To get to the station around 7:30.
But that's why WRT has coffee.
So that you can start your week off right.
WORT is recruiting a volunteer to run the soundboard each week on Monday mornings from 7:30 to 9 a.m.
You'd run all on-air operations for our morning program, The 8 O'Clock Buzz with Brian Standing.
No experience is necessary, but a familiarity with computers and a strong sense of punctuality and reliability are preferred.
For details, call 608-256-2001 and ask to speak with Shali Pittman.
Or head online to wortfm.org/volunteer to fill out our volunteer application.
Friday 8 o'clock buzz. That's the Grateful Dead. That's just a little tease about what's coming up. You know, it's Friday. It's 8:27. It's Friday again at 8:27. These weeks fly by like grease lightning. You're in luck, though, because you got a lot of live music. Some Dead-related we're going to hear about now with Unker's Picks. But first, here's Jim Wilson with the Unker's Picks disclaimer.
Unker's Picks are not influenced by any outside entities. Unker consults with an advisory board of one, Unker Malhotra. The cost of admission to any recommended show is of no concern to Unker, nor the price of beer, nor the cleanliness of the venue restrooms. Unker has one goal and one goal only in the delivery of Unker's Picks, for you to have a kick-ass musical experience. Unker's Picks is a trademark of the multinational corporation DJ Spin Cycle. All copy and trade therein is solely possessed. Here's Unker Malhotra!
We gotta get Unker potted up here. We still got the Dead, and we've got all these juicy picks, but we don't have Encore.
Good morning, Madison.
Oh, there's that voice. That beautiful voice.
Good morning. I was lost in Dark Star.
You had to come back to Earth, man.
Yeah, man. It's it's the Grateful Dead reunion tour, man. Can you dig it? Yeah, man. Happy April Fools in advance. But we do have Jed and Company with Jonathan Ho at the Harmony tonight. And Jerry will be holographically teleporting to the High Noon Saloon on Saturday with Very Garcia, a Jerry tribute by members of Chicken Wire Empire and another one. Also Saturday, a big Jiggy benefit for Jeff Castor, Jiggy Jams, a benefit at Rubinia Courtyard. It's going to be a bumping one. The Real Jaguar spinning some tunes at Lola's on Sunday. April 2nd sold out concert Los Lobos at Stoughton Opera House, so good luck with that one. April 3rd, Herbie Hancock at the Orpheum. Tomorrow, I am on the airwaves with Pan Africa.
At 2 p.m.
2 p.m. And don't, please don't play Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart. It's got 1 freaking billion views on YouTube. But if you're in Ohio, you can start playing Dark Side of the Moon at 2:32:54, 2 p.m. 32 in the afternoon on the day of the eclipse, for the album to sync with the eclipse totality and the lyrics when the sun is eclipsed by the moon. End of the public service announcement. Thank you.
Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. That's Grateful Dead, Dark Star, from the legendary Europe 72 tour. I've never seen this release. Encore just handed it to me. That's a prize. Speaking of music and weirdness, Jim, we're going to have that weird music cut here in just a minute as we get going on segment two. Hey, you want to hear something funny? Well, I can tell you it's not the origin of April Fool's Day, which I was so disappointed doing a little research. It's about the least funny thing I've ever heard of. Here's how it came about. It was the year 1582. 1582. See, already this is not funny. So not even their music was funny in 1582. You kind of want lute music to be funny, but it's not. 1582. I don't know. It seems like one of the least funny years imaginable. Do we have that lute music? It's just, you'll have to take my word for it. It's not funny at all. And there it is. 1582, okay? So that's, people were sitting around, you know, and April Fool's Day hasn't been invented yet. But they've got lute music. And in 1592, France, also not a particularly funny place. Remember, they like Jerry Lewis. Anyway, France switched from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar. Okay, that's enough lute music. As called for by the Council of Trent, as most people remember, in 1563. Super not funny. In the Julian calendar, as in the Hindu calendar, as many of you well know, the new year began with the spring equinox around April 1st. But the Gregorian calendar, stay with me because it doesn't get any funnier. The Gregorian calendar changed that. Anyhow, people who were slow to get the news or failed to recognize that the start of the new year had moved to January 1, people who continued to celebrate New Year's during the last week of March through April 1, became the butt of jokes and were called April Fools. Hilarious! I know. Completely nutty. But still, fast forward to now, and you know, in the hands of the right people, modern-day pranks and hoaxes are sometimes the cause for some good laughs every April 1st. And anticipating all of this got me thinking about laughter, funniness, what they're made of. So I called Friday Buzz to my regular spoof segment guest, Scott Dickers, to see if he could join us this morning. Scott thinks about funny things all the time. He's the founding and longest-running editor of The Onion, who, among other things, currently writes the Substack newsletter, No Dickering Around. Good morning, Scott, and welcome to the Friday Buzz for the first time as yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Andy. What a treat to not be wearing a silly mask.
We have you in all your glory. Scott, what do you remember growing up about what made you laugh?
Boy, I take it very seriously, laughter and humor. So, and it was serious then. It was for me like a secret of the universe that I had discovered that allowed me to get more love and attention, and it allowed me to connect with people, to be taken more seriously, to belong. You know, it was like my only route to all those things. Other people had their own routes. Other people figured out, you know, how to, you know, maybe play sports or talk, like do chit-chat or who knows, you know, how people bond. I don't know. The only way I know that people bond is through humor. Mm. And so it was really like my lifeline. And, you know, to go back to the really earliest, I would have to say it was like I would draw like a little funny book. I would make a little funny flip book, and I would staple the pages together. And my grandma would laugh and tell me how great it was. And I was like, okay, this is the ticket. This is like, that was my version of like every stand-up comic tells the story of the first time they went on stage and got laughs. And they're like, okay, I'm hooked.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what a paradox, listening carefully to what you just walked us through. A paradox being being taken more seriously by being funny. It shows you the currency that laughter is. Why do you think laughter matters?
Boy, you know, I'm writing this book right now, The Elements of Humor, which is sort of like hoping to be the Strunken White of humor. And so I'm literally thinking and talking about this a lot now. But I think it matters because, imagine the world without it. Imagine we literally would all be walking around talking to each other like ChatGPT. It would just be horrible. It would be dark. It would be lifeless, loveless. It just gives me the creeps to even think about it.
Yeah.
So, like, it literally is what humanizes all interaction. And it's like, you know, sometimes you'll have an interaction with another human and there won't be humor. It'll be like, you know, customer service or the DMVs, like, who knows. But as soon as there's a little joke cracked by either party, it's like, oh, okay, we're human beings now. Like, oh my God, that was so uncomfortable before when we were just being robots.
Almost magical, because that happens in an instant. If I heard your example correctly, it could be, you could be at the counter, getting your license renewed, and no connection is being made from heartbeat to heartbeat.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. So, like, I was at the clinic, the healthcare clinic or whatever.
Yep.
And they have this whole, like, system where you check in at all these various desks, and they have these little badges that vibrate when you take them so that they can call when you're ready or whatever. So it's like technological. And this woman was passing out these badges to the various receptionists from a bucket and, like, scooping them and putting them in a thing. And we're standing there, and I'm talking to the person. It's very, you know, what's your birthday? So very non-humorous. And then I had this idea, and I decided, you know what, I'm just going to share this idea. So I said to the woman with the bucket, I said, you know what would be really funny? Just one day, instead of delivering those badges to all these people's little buckets, deliver live crawdads. wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be funny? What a great gag that would be. And suddenly we're all, like, smiling and laughing and talking like human beings. And it just made the experience so much more interesting.
We were in line at the airport last month, and you know,
there's a good place. You're not allowed to joke at the airport.
No fooling. And everybody's pretty clenched, right? Am I going to make it? Am I going to get hassled? Am I going to be on time? Right? So we're at the front desk checking in there. And you know those giant fish bowls of the tags that you can fill out and put on your bag with the little elastic string on it?
Right, yeah.
And there's, like, you know, there's the giant filled with them. And I couldn't reach it, so I asked the woman in front of me, would you please hand me one of those? And she reached in and she took one and she turned around and handed it to me. And I said, oh, not that one. I shouldn't bore people with my own incident like that, but I'm really enjoying the difference that moment makes that you're articulating so well with regards to instantly we were in this stuff together.
And you did the classic, most elemental type of humor, which, you know, they're studying now. Peter McGraw, who's a professor at the University of Boulder, he wrote this book called The Humor Code, where he tried to deduce all humor into one unified field theory, and that is the idea of the benign violation. And it's very simple, and it goes back to the earliest type of humor you can remember, which is probably peekaboo. When you're a baby, somebody does something that kind of scares you a little bit. Oh my God, they disappeared. And then they show up again, and they're smiling, and you get this relief. So what that is a benign violation. It's like a slight violation of a norm, but then it's relieved. And so you did that exact, it's like saying, just kidding. You know? But when we do it, it's really fun. It's like a super fun thing to, and it's the same thing as set up punchline. It's like you set people up and they're like, uh-oh, what's going to happen? Is this going to be dangerous for me? Am I in trouble?
Yeah.
And then it's relieved with a just kidding or whatever the punchline is or what your joke was with the fishbowl. And it's delightful. It's like, what a fun way to to live with that little, it's like a little dance we can do.
If you're just jumping in, I'm talking with the founding and longtime editor of The Onion, Scott Dickers. You can subscribe to Scott's Substack newsletter, No Dickering Around, for tips on how to up your own creativity. Scott, over the run of this radio show, we've had such fun together. You've appeared as a bunch of joke guests, including people like Elon Musk and Mitch McConnell. And just last Friday, you played Aaron Rodgers. Your Rodgers impersonation, by the way, I practically ruined my weekend last weekend in a good way because of the number of people who thought it was real, and they were thoroughly confused by it, even though I gave it up, as I always do at the end. This kind of gets us back to April Fool's Day stuff.
Yeah.
Scott, do you think people in general are gullible?
Yes. First of all, thanks for telling me that you liked the Aaron Rodgers. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, I feel like it works every time. It's like we're suckers for it. When you set, and I know this from The Onion, it's like people can go years thinking The Onion is a real newspaper until they finally see the right story and they're like, oh, I get it. So it's like this delay of, we want to believe. We're naive. And humor helps us distinguish between reality and fantasy. It's like one of the most basic things it does. So we're inclined to accept reality for what we see it as. And then as soon as somebody points out either directly or if you figure it out through the various clues that the humorist gives you, for example, then it's a fun realization when you realize, oh, I've just been peekabooed. Somebody was hiding their face and then they just popped out and now everything's okay,
Uh-huh. We've been kind of dabbling in, I guess you could call it, theory of funny. I want to ask you an application question, and this goes back to your impersonations, which are marvelous.
Thank you.
Share with the listeners, what do you pay attention to in order to do a good impersonation like you did so well with Aaron Rodgers this time last week?
This is fun to answer because nobody ever wants to know that. Nobody cares about that. They just want the fun. They just want the jokes. And I actually made a whole video of this on YouTube, how to do impressions, because there's definitely a way to do it. But it's funny because I'm not a sports guy, so I literally didn't even know who Aaron Rodgers was the day before our interview when you called and said you wanted to do it. Wow. So I had to look him up and figure out, read a little about him and see what happened, what was the news, and then just watch a couple of videos of him. And basically, there's a couple of layers. The first layer is what's the pitch, pace, the register, is it a baritone voice? So like the basic physicality of the voice.
Yes.
And that's pretty easy to do. And there are some impressionists, like Dana Carvey, who doesn't even care about that part. He'll do a Sam Elliott impression and it'll still work and it'll still be funny even though he doesn't even have that range. But I like to get that range because it helps. And then the second thing is that's where Dana Carvey shines, is finding a characteristic tick that they have in their voice. And so for Aaron Rodgers, his characteristic tick was a monotone with a lot of ums. Just go this. No matter what he's talking about, he could be talking about the most exciting thing in the world. That's what he did. So it's like, okay, I got it. And you can, I can usually like hear a voice pretty quickly and either get it or don't. And some people have very unique and strange voices. Thankfully, Aaron Rodgers' voice was a super easy one. So like I had to study George W. Bush for about 3 years, like listen to tapes every day and practice, listen to myself recording, because he has this weird mix of a Southern and a New England accent, and he has all these weird little quirks. He was super hard to crack. So don't ask me to do anybody like that. Trump, same thing, super difficult. He's like a Long Island laundress mixed with like a mobster. It's like the crazy combination. Uh-huh. It's really hard to nail.
Those layers, as you called them, they're almost like articles of clothes that you put on one at a time to become the person.
Sure.
And one of the layers that I heard you speak to is pacing. That to me was what I liked the most about your Aaron Rodgers, and so dead on.
He talks very slowly.
Yes, and then there's these, like, you could drive a train through these pauses as he thinks more deeply. You can just hear the grinding of his brain. That really came off well. From impersonations, let's go back to regular funny business for a minute, Scott. And I'm talking to Scott Dickers, founding editor of The Onion and New York Times bestselling writer on funny business. What are the elements of a good joke or a gag, in your opinion? Just the top two or three elements.
I could give you the top three, but there are 11, and there are 11 different ways to make something funny, and the best humor uses one or more of those 11 things in any joke. And let's see if I can recite them by memory. I'll get most of them.
Okay.
They are basically literary devices. So you take an opinion or a value judgment or something you want to say, and you just filter it through one or more of these 11 things, and you're going to get yourself a joke that has a very good chance of working. They are irony, character, reference, wordplay, shock, misplaced focus, madcap, analogy, meta-humor. How many was that? That might have been.
I didn't count. I was just listening too carefully to each one. Each one is just sort of their own planet.
They are, but they're like spices in a recipe. Mm. So you can mix and match and get a totally different flavor. So I'm no mathematician, but I think that gives you like thousands and thousands of possible combinations. And then if you pair it with the subject matter that you're talking about, that's another, you know, quadrillion possibilities. So the ways to make something funny are really endless, but that's a really simple framework that you can use. Like if you're a professional comedy writer and you have to sit down and write a joke, those are tools that you use.
I'm talking to Scott Dickers. Get his tips on how to up your own creativity by subscribing to his Substack newsletter, No Dickering Around. God, I hate it that we're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you this. In what ways can being funny have a negative or positive impact on a person socially and professionally? You dabbled in this a little bit as you thought back to your own childhood, but what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are scared right now to be funny because they think we live, and I guess we do, the pendulum has swung pretty far in like the PC direction, and so people are scared if they say the wrong thing or they make an inappropriate joke or comment at work, they're going to get canceled. And so now more than ever, it's really important to put humor in context and understand that it's really just an elevated way of communicating. It's like the same as regular communication, but with a little pizzazz, you know?
Yes.
And so if you're a respectful person, if you're a nice person and, you know, you treat people well, the humor that you do is going to treat people well and be respectful and be nice, and it's not going to be a problem. The issue can be when you've got some passive-aggressive tendencies or whatever, you've got stress or whatever, your humor is going to come out mean and it might come out offensive and it might not work. So, my God, that's really important. Like people think about that probably all day at work. Like, oh my God, did I say the wrong thing?
Yeah.
And so just remembering that it's just communication. Mm-hmm. And if you bring the same level of humanity that you would bring to any communication to that, you're sitting pretty. I think on April Fool's Day, I think that's a good, message to impart.
Scott Dickers, thank you so much for joining us as yourself. And I know our listeners will look forward to your next appearance as somebody else, which I hope will be soon.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I look forward to that as well.
Great talking with you. I hope you have a great weekend, Scott.
You too, Andy. Nice chatting.
Okay, bye-bye. Scott Dickers is the founding and longtime editor of The Onion, a semi-regular guest here on the Friday Buzz. He's a New York Times bestselling author whose books include How to Write Funny. Get his tips on how to up your creativity by subscribing to his Substack newsletter, No Dickering Around. Okie dokie. It's almost surreal talking with Scott Dickers as himself, I have to say. But speaking of surreal, how about a full solar eclipse? That's coming up on April 8th. Coming up next on the Friday Buzz, we'll talk with a UW-Madison astronomer about all things eclipsed. This is Back Porch Radio, WRT-FM 89.9 and WRT-FM.org online, originating in Madison, Wisconsin. It's 8:51.
It's like a ride on a freeway, dodging bullets while you're trying to find your way. Everyone's around but no one does a damn thing. It brings me down, but I won't let them. If I say fake, well, you'd be correct. And if I don't speak, it's cause I can't disconnect. But I won't be burned by the reflection of the fire in your eyes. And just staring at the sun, oh, oh, oh. And just staring at the sun, oh, oh, oh. And just staring at the sun.
It's the Friday 8 o'clock Buzz. I'm Andy Moore. Segment 3. Prior to this morning's show, 649 years prior to be exact, the total eclipse of the sun was recorded for the first time. It happened in Ugarit, an area of Syria, using the most up-to-date technology available, a clay tablet, which eventually became known as a laptop. On April 8, people in a significantly large portion of the U.S. will get a shot at seeing a total solar eclipse, so get your clay tablets out. Professor James Lattice is blowing the dust off of his. He's an astronomer and the director of the UW-Madison Space Place. He joins us now. Good morning, Professor Lattice, and welcome to the Friday Buzz.
Good morning. Thanks for calling.
You bet. Astronomy-wise, what exactly happens during this event?
So what's happening is an alignment of the center of the sun with the center of the moon and an observer. And so if that if your point of observation is on the line, on that straight line,
yeah,
then you see an eclipse. And what you see is the disk of the moon cover the disk of the sun.
The total solar eclipse seems like a kind of a Super Bowl-sized event for scientists like yourself. What kinds of things are watched for, and what kinds of things can be learned about when this happens?
So first of all, I'm actually not a scientist. I'm a historian of astronomy.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
I'm not actually doing research. In fact, the research that's mostly being done these days has to do with the nature of the sun and the solar corona, although there's also a substantial amount of, because this is the best time, if you're in the zone of totality, this is the best time to study the solar corona, which tells us about what's going on in the outer regions of the sun, what kind of mechanisms are transmitting energy out from the sun, which is, of course, an important concern in terms of the dynamics of the solar system as a whole. But there's other science going on in terms of how it affects the Earth's atmosphere, and even investigations of how total eclipses affect wildlife and the environment around us.
I'm sorry to not have this much emphasis on history as I would have, if you could expand just a little bit more on how this tricks, for want of a better word, sort of the biosphere on Earth, and how what happens with how wildlife behaves.
So we're talking about now, if you're in the zone of totality, which I want to emphasize, Wisconsin is not. We're well outside of that perfect alignment, and so we'll see only a partial eclipse here in Wisconsin on Monday, the April 8th.
Yes.
But in the zone of totality, where the densest part of the moon's shadow, which is called the umbra, as it sweeps across the Earth, it's a big zone relative to in human terms. It's 110 or so miles across, I think, this time. And so you have an area of the Earth there where suddenly, well, not really suddenly, but the sunlight that's normally warming the Earth in the daytime is cut off. And so as that dark shadow approaches, you have atmospheric effects. The cooling around the edges of the shadow kicks up breezes and winds, and wildlife reacts to this. The birds think it's evening apparently and stop singing, the daytime birds, but the evening birds will start singing. So you hear the kinds of things that remind us of evening, what we feel, the transitions we feel around evening. And also the nature of the lighting is very foreign, as when the earth is being illuminated only by the tiny little crescent of sunlight that's left as the moon has just about covered the sun. We literally see the world differently because it's being illuminated by an unfamiliar source of light, and one that's a little bit even unsteady in a way that sunlight is never
unsteady.
Unsteady.
Interesting. Let's delve into history for a moment. Why did people long ago make of this phenomenon? You know,
it varied quite a bit with how well informed you were, of course is always true. The causes, the understanding, basically the modern understanding of eclipses as an alignment of these two great spheres, the sun and the moon and the three great spheres, I guess, sun, moon, and earth, that goes back to the ancient Greeks. And any educated person knew that what was happening was the moon was interposing itself between the sun and the earth in the case of a solar eclipse. Of course, that's the standpoint of the well-informed natural philosopher or whatever. And so they've certainly been associated and still are to this day associated, well, you know, astrologically and mystically with bad effects generally. At least historically, they've never been seen as good. Solar eclipses have been seen as harbingers of, a change of regime or the death of the king or blah, blah, blah. So there's plenty of that kind of stuff. Choose your culture and look it up. I certainly am not well-versed on all the cultures on Earth. But generally, these sorts of things are disturbing because they're a diversion from the natural order, and they're relatively hard to predict unless you... I have a good modern understanding of astronomy.
Will you travel to witness this, or are you going to just stay close to home? And
it depends on the weather in the immediate. I can't take a lot of time off. Some people are making extensive trips, but I can't get away. So if the weather looks promising, I will probably try to dash somewhere into the path of totality the day before.
Yes.
But
if
it looks hopeless, and we are talking about early April in North America, I'll be here with everybody else.
All right. Professor James Lattice, thank you for joining us on the Friday Buzz. I learned that the next observable solar eclipse in the U.S. will be in 2044. Will you come back to the show then?
Certainly. Okay. Absolutely.
Deal. Have a good weekend.
Okay. Thank you, you too.
Professor James Lattice is a UW-Madison astronomer and the director of UW's Space Place, astronomy historian. Jim, if we could bring that beautiful music under it, we're going to go ahead and wrap this show. The Zone of Totality. I would have gotten up early this morning and come to the station just to hear that phrase. Zone of Totality. So thank you, James Lattice. Thank you to our other guests, Brian Abel, and the one and only, the very funny and fun and kind Scott Dickers, who phoned in this morning to join us to talk about April Fools and all things funny. Ankur Malhotra, Elliot LeBrun, Jim Wilson, my brothers on the Friday Buzz. Thanks to all of you. Haven't given a shout out and a big cheer of gratitude to Charlie Pittman in a while. She's our talk and news director and a tremendous leader here at WRT-FM. The Insurgent Radio Kiosk is coming up next. And after that, and I bet you already know this, Chris Powers and the Mudacres Bluegrass Program. Congratulations to UW Women's Basketball Team advancing last night into WNIT. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. I hope you have a great damn weekend. Aloha kama aina.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, March 25th.
If you're concerned about fossil fuels and climate change, consider an energy source that, according to its backers, will make everyday living comfortable and healthier. What is this miraculous substance? Oil. Huh? Yes, that filthy scourge of our planet and health is being ballyhooed as our globe's energy and environmental salvation. By whom? Of course, the American Petroleum Institute, the powerhouse lobbying front for ExxonMobil and other petro-profiteers. API recently bragged that it will pour tens of millions of dollars into a PR blitz during this year's presidential election to demonize clean energy sources and demand that government promote more fossil fuel production. API's campaign slogan is Lights on Energy, but the luminosity of its media message is mighty dim. Start with the fact that Big Oil has zero public credibility, having routinely gouged us on prices for years and knowingly lied to us for decades about not causing climate change. Second, the demand by oil barons that government quit intruding into the free market is a whiny embarrassment. Hello. For more than a century, oil corporations have gorged on billions and billions of dollars in taxpayer handouts. And they are in line to keep getting $2.5 billion a year in corporate welfare for the next decade. Didn't their mamas ever teach them not to talk with their mouths full? Also pathetic is their partisan wail that President Biden is restricting their production and profits. Hello again. U.S. oil production reached a record high last year. Big oil's profits are soaring, and they're now jacking up our gas prices again. Meanwhile, 2023 was the hottest year our globe ever recorded. This is Jim Hightower saying, let's reflect the heat back on these greed heads. For facts and action items, go to fossilfreeforhealth.org. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
Youth ages 18 and under are encouraged to submit to the Madison Public Library's We Read Youth Voices Writing Contest. The theme for the 2024 writing contest is Celebrate Small Heroes. Learn more about contest guidelines and submit stories at madisonpubliclibrary.org/youthvoices. Help make a portrait of Madison and engage in a unique portrait-making project, Our Town Everywhere.